The third grade conference, lecture 5, and this is looking at the 9-year change. Rudolf Steiner tells us in his lectures to the teachers, The Study of Man, or as it's now called, The Foundations of Human Experience, that the incarnating child feels increasing antipathy towards the spiritual world from whence he has come. This is perfectly healthy. This is important, in fact. Otherwise, we would not be able to face earthly life in freedom. On the other hand, as he tells us, there is growing sympathy for that which is streaming towards us from the future. And that, in particular, at the stage of life at which we're looking at the child, is going to be the third grade time, the 9-year change, when that which streams from the future, which is particularly at this age the astral body, becomes something towards which the child feels greater sympathy, greater interest, important, natural, but in a certain way, also a distressing aspect of human life. And this is why when you go into grade 4, you'll want to look at Rudolf Steiner's great series of lectures on Norse mythology called The Mission of the Folk Souls. As with all of Steiner's lectures, they're not only about Norse mythology. That's just the most important of the themes he touches on there, but he also speaks there about how the human being was not really meant to bring the astral body into his nature, to really incorporate it, until he was about 35 years of age. That was the intention of the progressive spiritual beings. Only then would the human being have the strength and the experience of earthly life to be able to take in the tremendous power and the destructive forces that are inherent in the astral body. But through an entente cordiale, we might say, the great one of many, many compromises that had to be made between the progressive spiritual beings and the hindering beings, it was arranged that the astral body would be incorporated at age 14, 21 years earlier than is really good for humanity. Now, Rudolf Steiner does not take this further and ever explain why it is that on top of that, there's also a kind of window that opens up between ages 9 and 10, where the astral body, for all practical purposes, for a period of time, is almost as fully taken in as it will be then 4, 5, 6 years later, when the child really goes through puberty and adolescence. So not only do we have this 21-year imposition that of the astral body coming too soon, but in addition, there are a few more years added to that. So we see that the child at this age is particularly vulnerable and not at all really physically, etherically ready yet for the astral body. So this means that we could say that the 9-year change is something akin to an illness, that basically the source of most illness in the human being stems from the astral body with its powerful, again, catabolic, destructive forces, which are right in their place, but so often not in their place, and therefore there is in a way something wrong about them. This means, then, that the work of the Waldorf school in nursery, in kindergarten, in grades 1 and grade 2, is giving the child something of a crash course in how to strengthen their etheric forces on the one hand, and also come to understand what the astral forces will bring and how they can really meet them in the right way. So we are trying to give the children, and I don't want this expression to be understood in the wrong way, but there is something true about it, a kind of street smartness. But it's, you know, the spiritual street, the street down which that astral body will be meandering and on the prowl, and in this way that the child is wise enough to be able to meet it and to be able to counter its effects. And perhaps for some of you, when I speak about prowling and kind of predatory nature of the astral body, it might bring to mind a story that you may have told, such as Little Red Riding Hood, Little Red Cap, who meets that wolf, who claims to be, of course, perfectly innocent, her own grandmother. He comes in a very deceptive guise. And there, in a way, you have the astral body overstepping its bounds. You know, it's not a dog, it's not a sheep, it's a wolf that finds that when it meets Red Riding Hood directly, she's not going to go for it. But when it meets her in the guise of something much sweeter that she's expecting to meet, then it takes on a much more nefarious quality. So the fairy tales in particular are not only a way of explaining the first grader's experience of the world, they're also a way of getting that first grader ready for what's going to come in third and fourth grade, the power of the astral body. We think of fables in grade 2. There again, the animal world, the astral world, is presented as something that one must be very cautious about, you know, that these animals are not shown necessarily or usually at all in a very positive way. And some people are very critical about this, that we're, you know, anthropomorphizing the animals and giving them all of our unsavory characteristics, and what a terrible thing for children in a time when animals are at such risk in our world. But I'd say another way of looking at it is to say that the fables are facing squarely the reality of what the astral body is like when it encounters the innocence of the world around it. And seemingly the saint stories have another quality like that, that the saints are individuals, for most of these saints, who had a kind of Christ-like quality in their etheric body, which made them able to face the imprecations of the astral body with strength and integrity, even though at times they suffered greatly trying to meet it on behalf of their fellow human beings who were not as well prepared as they were. So we hope this is what you have been doing. You know, and it's of course a greater struggle today. It's not like these fairy tales are universally popular. Many parents are very concerned about the violent nature of them, the sexist nature. You know, all of this sort of political life of rights stuff gets hurled at you. And it would be good for them to understand, to go a little bit more deeply into the nature of these stories. If you're teaching in a charter school, maybe it's hard for you to do very much with the saints. Perhaps you can teach some of the more prominent ones, like Saint Francis, as historical figures and tell stories about them. Once again, there may be parents or even administrators who are not entirely happy if you're teaching these very Catholic-type figures. But there again, this is not something that we're doing to please pressure groups or to deal with issues of church and state. This is something that we are doing really to give the child that suit of armor, that thick skin, the strength to be able to meet the astral body. Or to put it another way, we are trying to strengthen their etheric forces, to give them the resilience and elasticity that they need. Because what happens at this junction, somewhere between ages 9 and 10, is that the astral body is now freed up from its connection to the ego. The ego lets it go, and the astral rushes with the force of a powerful wind, as I said, traveling well nigh at the speed of light, and just tries to break through the castle walls that we've built up in first grade, or the monastic cloister that we helped to build up in second grade. It tries to rush through that with as much impact as possible. This is something of a scouting, a reconnoitering mission on the part of the astral body, but nonetheless, it's coming with great force. If the etheric body is like a drop of water filled with surface tension, the astral body will come, perhaps, find a way in, but be repelled, be pushed away. It will come back, be pushed away. This coming back and forth, we will see, is characteristic. The astral body just wants to rush in and take over. The etheric body uses its rhythmicity, the strong rhythmic forces, to resist the astral body. So if the kindergarten, nursery kindergarten teachers did their job well, if you or your predecessor as a class teacher in grades 1 and 2 did the job well, the etheric body is strong enough that the child only gets enough of the astral body to be able to take this next step in their life. If, however, the etheric forces are weak, and it's not to say this is all your fault. Certainly, family life and the world in which we live have a lot to do with this, and children's guardian angels, as I said earlier, are not necessarily present in the way that they used to be, then the astral forces will tend to come and embed themselves in one way or another. This is a time when, we'll discuss this further, working with parents, when parents sometimes give up and feel, oh my gosh, you know, accelerated adolescence has come and that's that, I can't do anything about it. And we also then have to be working with the parents to really help strengthen their sense that they are still in the driver's seat. They're still the captain of the ship, whatever metaphor you want to use, to give them that sense of strength that the child needs them more than ever. Though certainly the child's relationship with his or her parents will be changing as time goes on. And we must remember this experience, though it is premature, though it is not at all what the progressive forces of the spiritual world had in mind, that in many ways it can be distressing for a child. In spite of all of this, there are also compensating factors. And one of the most important of these factors is that because the astral body is coming from the future, with great speed and intensity, it is also opening up a vista of the future for the child. And here we could say we have the figure of the prophet. We'll see how important this is in the stories of the Hebrew scriptures. these individualities who were allowed to see into the future, whom the future streamed towards them, opening up very great vistas that were otherwise closed to human beings. So third graders can be prophetic in a certain way. That's very important. That's very good because it allows them to start to take steps away from the security and predictability of childhood to take the next step forward in their life. So in this respect, in this regard, this age is very important, and we'll see how this plays out. There are also a host of other experiences that the children will have, which I'm going to speak about in the next segments, which you can also, in a way, be a prophet. You can predict this. Rudolf Steiner gives us real insight into this age. And this can be very helpful for parents and for you. And also as a kind of dividend, it can really build up your street cred with the parents as they see that you're able to tell them months in advance things that are probably going to happen at home. So I want to share these aspects with you, and we can see how important that is. And I just want to say again, please have a look, if you haven't already, at those two dynamic diagrams that are available to you in this conference, in which I show in a schematic way what's going on. That will help you kind of carry the pictures as we look in greater detail at the ups and downs of life for the 9 to 10-year-old child. We'll also see how, again, you know, this is never just any grade never quite stands on its own. We see then something of a foundation for grade 4, where once again there is a prophetic quality. Odin, the leader of the Aesir, the good Norse gods, through dint of great self-sacrifice, is also given prophetic insight. And the prophecy that he receives colors the entire existence of the Aesir. It plays into virtually every one of the stories that we tell the children. So for 2 years, the children are really in the presence of beings, human and divine, who are living very strongly in the future. Very, very different from what happens in grade 5. So let's keep that in mind as we go further in the 9-year change.